It's the Blue of the Night on RTE Lyric FM, and I'm delighted to welcome into the studio a man who's in the process of recording a live session for us this week on the programme. His name is Johnny Feen. What age, John, were you when you took up the guitar, your first guitar?
I was probably about, I would say, eight or nine, yeah. It kind of started in Limerick. I lived in Garryon in the 50s in Limerick, and they sort of about 1957, 58. Elvis Presley was absolutely huge. You know, he was the man, kind of thing. But I loved the sound, and you know, it was rock and roll. Rock and roll was brand new. You know, so to a 7-year-old kid, it sounded great, and that's what got me interested in the guitar, I think. And so I had that interest, but it wasn't really until I moved to Shannon that I actually began to play. You know,
are you self-taught?
Yeah, self-taught. Yeah.
So the family moved to Shannon, as you say, was it 1961 or thereabouts?
61, I think it was, yeah. Yes, yeah.
And how did your life change after that?
It was amazing, actually, you know, coming from Limerick to Shannon, because my dad worked in the airport. Shannon was an absolutely completely new town. It was very American, you know. There was families who'd come over from America, England, Germany. I think there was a family from Australia. So it was just a very cosmopolitan.
Yes, thing. This was because of the industrial estate. Yeah. Right. So these people, they were managing plants, were they, or just
working? I think what? Yes, yeah, yeah. There was, I think at the time there was a 3-year tax incentive. They actually built, I think, houses as well for a lot of them up in the hill in Shannon. Mm. There were the bungalows that actually surrounded the flats. You know, so this was for a 9-year-old kid. This was absolutely amazing stuff.
Yeah, a culture shock, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah.
Completely different.
It was.
And then I presume the children of these people, they were going to the local comprehensive with you then, were they? And
yeah, that actually, I think the comprehensive may have opened in 65. Yeah, either 64 or 65. And it was the first mixed school in Ireland, I think,
right,
as well. Again, that was for a young kid who'd been going to the Christian Brothers in Limerick and all the boys' schools, like suddenly having girls in your class was like, oh,
distraction, to say the least. Yeah.
Of course, that's the whole music. Like when the Beatles happened, and the 60s started, as they say. You know, it was just absolutely incredible, because the music was just, I mean, all the great bands that were coming out of England. You know, and the Beatles were really the top. You know.
Yes.
But they were incredible. And of course, what was happening in America as well.
But would you have heard all this in Shannon now?
I was very lucky, because there was a number of American families in Shannon, and they had like young, you know, sort of just sons and daughters going into their teens, really, you know. But the music that they were listening to in the, you know, 62 or 60, they actually brought like the LPs and the singles, you know, all over to over to Shannon. And I got to hear the Supremes and the Tamla Motown thing.
Right.
I think possibly before anybody.
Yeah. So there was all Chess and Stacks and all that kind of stuff.
Yes,
you were hearing before
it was
everyone else.
Absolutely mind-blowing. You know, yeah. I mean, at the same time, there was the great, you know, there was the Beatles, the Animals, the Kinks, the Stones, of course, you know. And so there was that great thing happening.
Yes. So would this be one of the reasons, perhaps, explaining why a blues and Celtic guitarist came out of Shannon rather than, say, Dublin then?
Well, possibly, I suppose, yeah. I mean, initially, I was when I was learning guitar, I mean, I was learning from what I was hearing on the radio, you know.
Yeah.
It was the English, like, it was the Beatles, the Animals, the Stones, the Kinks. So I was learning from that, and I was starting to play and get my first electric guitar. I think it was 14 or something like that when I managed to get my first electric guitar. At the same time, at the American thing, of course, as well. I mean, yeah. Which was equally as good. You know.
And your parents, what sort of music would they be playing at home?
My dad actually played harmonica, and he was big into jazz. Yeah, I mean, I have sort of childhood memories of he had a great collection of jazz 78s, actually, you know, at the time. And his idol was Louis Armstrong, and his harmonica idol was Larry Adler.
Right.
So that, you know, so I think it was mainly, my mum, she was a very good singer. So between the two of them, I think, you know, like what I was hearing from at home as well, you're growing up prior to the kind of rock, you know, we'd say the Beatles thing or like the late 50s rock and roll or yeah. whatever, you know.
So it's an atypical background anyway. We can leave it at that.
And
yeah.
Into the 60s, I mean, I was playing, as I say, mainly, I started getting into blues, blues guitar. And as the 60s rolled on, I didn't really start playing traditional music. And I must admit, initially I didn't have a great interest in it until around the mid-60s, maybe about 68 or 69, because, living in Clare, you were getting to hear an awful lot of traditional music that was around. There was some fantastic traditional players there. So I began to kind of take notice, and I got interested in the tenor banjo. I kind of fancied learning some tunes, you know. So I met up with some people actually who in Limerick who were very into it. There was a folk singer and his wife. I think the chap's name might have been Mick Hogan. And his wife Diane, and they used to travel down to kind of sessions in Clare, and they kind of said, "Would you fancy, you know, coming down to Lisdoonvarna some weekend?" And I thought this was a great idea because I was living in Shannon, of course. So what actually happened was, because the old days in Shannon was like the old dust roads, and it was nothing like it is now. Mm. So I made my way down to on a summer's afternoon, down to I think probably about 1968 or 69. Down to the corner of Ballycasey or the Hurler's Cross or somewhere like that, and the guy said I'll be passing by at about 5 o'clock or whatever. So you go down, you hang on. Sure enough, the car comes along, and you hop into the car. Mick had he was a banjo player himself, so he had the tenor banjo in the car down to Lisdoonvarna, and there was some great players, in the pubs down there. There was a pub actually called Curtin's Pub in Lisdoonvarna. And so I got, suddenly I was, hearing the great concertina players, fiddle players and everything. So that's what kind of started me on the banjo then, So I used to go as much as I could really to Doolin around, the years 69, 70. And, were the kind of main where I used to spend a lot of time down there. Picking up as much of the tunes as I could on the banjo, So,
but there was a music scene in Limerick as well at the time, wasn't there?
Ah, there was, yeah. The 60s was really good in Limerick.
In what way, John?
It was there was a great beat club scene starting probably in about 60, probably about 64. Beat clubs started opening up in Limerick, and there was as we called them in the day back in the day groups or beat groups. They weren't bands or. But so they actually they like the main Limerick group really was Granny's Intentions. Mm. They were the biggest, I think, of the But all the bands used to come down from Dublin, all the groups from Dublin and Belfast to play in Limerick. So if they were playing in the clubs in Dublin, they would also come to Limerick as well. There was the Gogo Club, the Cavalier Club. They were the same as as they had them in Dublin. Mm. So there was a great, great scene.
These are Irish groups or international groups?
Irish. Irish groups, yeah.
But round about this time, the late 60s, were you playing in Cork yourself as well?
When I was about 15, it was about 1967, I joined a band in Limerick called the Sweet Street.
Yeah.
And we actually had a chap called Joe Donnell who played electric violin, which was, at that time, I don't think there was any other band in the world that was, using an electric violin. We had a fantastic singer called Eugene Wallace. And the Sweet Street, we used to play mainly in Limerick, I think we may have gone to Dublin once, and we did go to Cork a couple of times, we played in Cork. Actually, we supported John Mayle's Blues Records in Cork. It was in the 006 Club. In Cork, about that would have been 68, I think. Yeah, that was an amazing. That was for me, that was absolutely fantastic.
You made up your mind at this stage? You wanted to be a musician, or was it just a hobby?
I had made up my mind actually. Yeah, although it was pretty back then. Back in the 60s, there was no money really to be made. There was. I mean, you might make a few quid
Well, you haven't done bad. What, 45 years on?
Yeah, it's 45 years. Oh, God, is it that long?
And you hooked up with a band called Jeremiah Henry, didn't you,
around the
late 60s. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, in the late, actually, it was, again, I think it was probably 69, 70. Guido De Vito was on drums and vocals and Jack Costler on bass and vocals. And they were originally in Granny's Intentions. Guido was a drummer and Jack was a bass player. We started doing sort of country rock mainly, you know.
Yeah.
Dylan, the band, John Sebastian, The Lovin' Spoonful. At that, I mean, it was pretty new. Country rock was only just kind of coming on the scene, you know, at that time.
And is it true you had a mansion? You were renting a mansion?
We rented. We did. We rented, actually. It was a, I suppose you could call it, you could call it a mansion because it was a really big house. It was out in Partain. Yeah, and we actually
which
rented
is just
that.
In County Clare, just over there.
Yes, just over the border, the river, yeah. And we rented the house. This was the kind of, we thought, this is the thing to do. This is really hip, you know, get the big, you know, we rehearse all day long in the big house. So, yeah, we were there actually. I think we were there for possibly a year, I think, really. You know, yeah, we were actually there. You know, we had the house. Mm. So we, as a fella, the guy says, like, we got it together.
So this is around 1970. And yeah. Had you befriended Rory Gallagher and Phil Lynott and all the rest of them at that stage?
Yeah, at that time, I think Thin Lizzy were just about started, I think. You know,
This is Eric Bell, was it? On guitar?
With Eric, yeah, the original Thin Lizzy, yeah. When Phil and Eric and Brian used to come down, they used to stay out in the house and in Partain.
In the mansion.
Yeah. Rather than drive, the mansion. Yeah, we say, come on out to the mansion, guys. And rather than sort of get back into the van and, you know, head out on the road in the lashing rain.
Quite a different road from now, so that's
could,
for sure.
Yeah. They could chill out, you know, for the night and get up the next day. But they did, actually, a number of times. We became good friends.
Now, I did a little bit of extensive research, which involved getting in touch with a couple of your brothers earlier. I understand there was an incident with Richard Harris.
This I only actually found out a couple of years ago, and before my mum died, God rest her soul. We lived in Henry Street in the early part of the 50s, right at the top of Henry Street. And on the corner, Richard Harris, his family, they had the flour mill. Like Harris's flour mill. Mm. And this is before Richard Harris was probably at that time, I suppose he would have been 18 or something like that. He hadn't, you know, he hadn't decided to make the move to England yet, or he hadn't decided, you know, that he was going to. And I was probably about 4 or something like that, or 5 at the time. I was absolutely nuts on cars because my dad was a great driver, and I broke his heart when I was a kid because I could not. He'd take me out, we'd go out, and I couldn't pass the car, but I'd want to get into the car, or I want to get up on a bike, or I want to, you know. Mm. But there was one evening, there was an insurance man who used to go around collecting the insurance, you know, from the different flats, and he had a, I think it was like a Morris Minor or something like that anyway, but he had parked it up on the hill just at the corner that leads down to the docks, so that, you know, if you sort of...
So we're like, 200 yards from the river, basically.
Yeah. And he had actually left the door open and left the keys in the car.
I think I know where this is going.
It's probably, I suppose, 7 o'clock of a summer's evening. I had been out playing at the footpath, however, and I saw him walking into a house, and I went down to the car straight away. And of course, I looked at the car. The door was a little bit open, and the keys were, sure enough, in the ignition. So in I hopped into the car. I let go of the handbrake. I'm not sure if I turned the engine or turned the key, but I was fooling with the keys.
Yeah.
But all I had to do was let the handbrake off.
Down the hill.
And the car slowly started to move down the hill towards the River Shannon. Eventually it would reach the River Shannon, I suppose, never go. So began to gather speed, and coming up the hill was Richard Harris on the other side of the road, and he looked at the car, he looked again, he saw there was no driver in the car. He couldn't believe this. He might have seen a little blonde head just above the car. So he starts to run after the car down the hill. opened the door, hopped into the car, jammed on the handbrake. I don't know, I'm not sure how far down the hill it had gotten at that stage, but
far enough.
And he was absolutely livid. I think he got me out of the car, took me up straight up to my mother and said, "This young man of yours is almost ended up." So I think, and as I say, that I didn't actually know that, you know, that it was Richard Harris who actually jumped in until a couple of years ago. So it's pretty.
I think joyriding is the term now, isn't it?
That's what we call it. It was actually the beginning of the joy.
Is it true you were invited to join Fleetwood Mac?
No.
Okay, that was only a rumour. I did type Johnny Feen in an internet search engine and up came 40,600 results, would you believe? How do you feel about fame? Is it fickle?
I don't know. Fame is a funny thing, isn't it? I never think of it. I mean, even to this day, for me it was more doing what I wanted to do, you know. It's funny, and you look at other people who are famous, and or if you're a fan of somebody, you take that other side of the fence, kind of, you know, as a person, say, "God, isn't it great? You know, isn't so and so fantastic? Isn't it great?" And then it's a funny thing, you know. As I say, like, I think I've always, you know, been more comfortable with just like that the music is good and. That I'm still enjoying, you know, I'm still enjoying.
Did you ever get to meet any of your own heroes?
Yes, I was very lucky over the years, actually. I got to meet B.B. King. I got to meet Albert King.
Now, you said you were playing a bit of trad music. How did the Horselips job come about then?
Well, what happened was, 1970, I was playing the tenor banjo, and I was learning quite a number of tunes, and I was, you know, I was kind of getting, you know, very much into the Irish traditional thing, as well as having the guitar as well. And Jeremiah Henry, we did a festival, I think it was in Ballybohan, in the summer. It must have been in the summer of 1972. It was a fairly big festival, actually. It was a And Horselips were top of the bill. Jeremiah Henry were playing on it like that day as well, you know. And I think maybe Skid Row were on the bill with Gary Moore, you know, when he was in the band, you know. So I think it was like that day when Jeremiah Henry were playing, Horselips got to hear me playing. And by the end of the summer, they were looking for a guitar player because the guitar player had left.
Was that Declan
Sinnott? Yeah, Declan Sinnott, I think, yeah. Charles, actually, like in those days, again, phones were, you know, nobody really had a phone. You went to the kiosk, put your two bob,
push button A,
you're going to phone Dublin. Yeah. But Charles actually came down to Shannon. He called to my house, and I wasn't there. For the last, like, kind of 6 months of that, we say that summer, I had been playing with a great fiddle player as well called Ted Fury, who was actually the father of the Fury brothers. And again, I had learned quite a number of tunes from Ted, you know. So Charles left a phone number, and sure enough, when I got home, I think it was Dawn and my brother, like he said, "Charles O'Connor called to the house last night. He was looking for you." And I said, looked at him and said, "Yeah." And no, he says, "Really?" And I still thought he was winding me up. And then my mother said, "No, he actually did call." So I went, and he left a phone number. A day or two later, I made my way up to Dublin, and I went. Actually, the first house that I went to was actually Jimmy Lockhart's house, and he lived on James's Street. His dad. It was actually a butcher in James Street, and Jimmy, the family lived overhead. So I went to Jimmy's house in James Street, and went upstairs, and Jimmy had the big old family piano in the room, you know, and it was an amp there actually, and a guitar as well. So we just started to play and just like jam a bit, and you know, just so by the end of the day, at the end of the evening, he said, "Would you like to join the band? Because we'd be very interested, you know, in having you in the band, you know." And I said, "I would love to."
Yeah. Then you ended up singing and writing a few tunes, and
yeah, but it went actually the first album was recorded. Happy to Meet Sorry to Part was recorded actually a month. It was only a month later. All the songs, the tunes, I mean, they had it more or less already, you know. So, yeah. I mean, I was kind of stepping in. So I was playing as a player on the first, you know. It wasn't really until we started doing the second album, The Join, that the input and the writing, you know. So from there on, you know, from there on until the very end, which was, yeah.
So this is 1972, is it?
1972 was the first. And
there's something about Horselips, a very different approach, wasn't there, at the time, compared to all other bands,
Nearly, I would think, every other band in the country. It was, I suppose in a way, by me joining the band, defined the style even more into 73. It just became, although we never called it, you know, but Celtic rock, you know, somebody coined that phrase, but that's what it became. You know, by the time Jarrick Doom was released, like in 73, that's what it had become. You know,
but apart from the sound, even the business side of things, you were very different to other Irish bands.
Oh yes, yeah. I mean, apart from the style of the band, and
just explain to younger listeners who mightn't be aware what happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Horselips were possibly the first band. I mean, they formed their own label, the Oats label. And even like down to the album, the album covers were actually designed by Charles O'Connor, our fiddle player.
So this is what, 3 or 4 years ahead of punk rock and all that?
Oh yeah,
that
it would have been, indie actually scene. It would have been, at least four, you know, that's right. And so they were really like, you know, in that sense as well, very unique. And they were doing it all like themselves, you know.
And the reunion is going well, the nostalgia market is...
Yes, very big.
Yeah. Your kid brother Ray is playing with.
Ray is now playing drums with. Yes, yeah.
So, John, just tell us about the musicians you're working with at the moment, and the two lads who will be playing along with you today. Now,
yeah, as well as playing, you know, playing with Horselips, I've been playing with Steve, actually, Stephen Travers, the bass player, for many years now. We met up in London. Both Steve and I were living in London around 1994 or 95. I was playing with a couple of bands, you know, like around London, and Steve was as well. And we finally got to meet up, because in all the time we spent in Ireland and very high profile, like Steve was with Miami and I was with Horses, but our paths for some reason just never crossed. So eventually in London we met up and we started playing together. And we both really liked each other's playing, you know. So we started playing together. And in 2001, I decided to move back to Ireland, and Steve did as well. He'd been there in London 20 years. I'd been in London 16, I think it was. So we decided to move back. And as soon as we got back to Ireland, we formed a three-piece band, basically, and, you know, the Johnny Fain band. And initially we had another drummer, but we a couple of years ago we met up with Blendy Krasnici, and
from which parish is Blendy now?
From Kosovo, right? Yeah, from Kosovo originally. Yeah, I think he moved to Ireland 8-9 years ago or something. Yeah, like that.
He's not going to be playing drums now in this session. What's he going to be doing?
Playing cajon,
right?
Cajon, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. And we've been doing like over the last 4 or 5 years, we've done a lot of gigs together.
Yeah,
you know,
as
a three piece, and it's always a pleasure to play with Steve and with Blendy. You know,
and yourself today, what are you going to be playing? What instruments?
I'll be playing mandolin, acoustic guitar, and electric.
And a Gibson Les Paul,
the Junior, as they call it. Yes.
Okay.
We'll the famous Junior.
We'll look forward to hearing those tunes. And if people want more information, is there a website out there, John?
There is johnnyfean.com.
Easy enough to remember. Yeah. So, and Fean is spelled F-E-A-N, isn't that it? Johnny Fean, F-E-A-N.
F-E-A-N, yeah.
.com.
.com, yeah.
Okay. Thanks a million, John.
Thank you.